I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Herb Dean. If you like MMA, and if you like to laugh, check out the One Punch Podcast at BT Sport.
This is Bruce Buffer. Tune in to the One Punch Pod on BT Sport.
So here we are. We are back with the BT Sport One Punch UFC Pod. With me, back in the seat, Brian Lacey alongside...
Brad One Punch Pickett.
Oh, it's good to see you, mate. It's good to see you. I listened to the podcast last week. Big shout out, Mikey Trainer filling in for us. That was, I've got to say, because I've been in the restaurant mode, because I don't know if I've told you, but I've been celebrating my birthday for about 2.5 weeks.
No, I've seen you by your Instagram. It's like, you remind me a bit of my brother, because my brother always, his birthday's in May 2nd. It's always that bank holiday weekend, and he's always had the longest birthday ever. So you're... birthday, 40th birthday, or Mike. It's like, you're celebrating your birthday again? What's going on? Literally, it was a week long of...
2 weeks so far.
2 weeks, okay.
And we've got Poland coming up. You've just given me a present. We're off to Poland together, so I'm expecting a few surprises from...
Uncle, when was actually your birthday?
2 years ago, mate. I was 40. 2 years ago, beautiful day. 31st of May. So
2 years ago, you're 40. Yeah, because I thought you looked older than 40.
Oh, mate, don't start this, mate. Don't start that. You've just hobbled in with your knee done and your face all wonky. Let's not even get on age. But I've got to say... superb episode, and I had a few comments about Mikey's accent being a lot subtler and sexier than mine.
What do you mean?
You don't have a beautiful Irish accent, mate.
Yeah, but you don't have an accent.
Though. Yeah, but I don't. But no. Yeah, but
and do I have an accent?
You've got more of a
monk. I won't call it
an accent. I'd just say you start slightly struggle talking.
I do. I mumble a lot. I think my brain works faster than my mouth at times. You ever have that problem?
I've very rarely got my brain working faster than my mouth. It's the other way. I think that's why our yin and yang work. But what I will say is I listen to the podcast, and if I'm going to do it in restaurant terms, Mikey's voice was like a succulent fillet steak, and your voice was like the bed of nails it had to sit on. That's exactly how I'd sum up you two.
So it worked?
It was pretty good. It'd be one of those fancy gastro restaurants where they stick a steak on a spade or something like that. Yeah. But anyway, let's not just talk about last week's episode. Let's talk about this week's episode. We've got loads to talk about. UFC Stockholm. We'll look back at that. We'll look back at Gustafsson laying his gloves in the cage there. We'll get some your thoughts on that. We've got some listener thoughts on their favourite moments of Alexander Gustafsson. We've got an interview with Alexander Rakic, which I'm looking forward to. He really made a statement on that card, taking out Jimmy Manua, and then we'll look ahead towards UFC 238, which is an absolute banger of a card. So you all set for that?
I'm buckling my seatbelt right now.
Buckle it in. Strap in. Off we go. So is that your sound effect?
That's
Should we try other sound effects that you might be good at? Let's open a tin of tuna.
Surely don't make it sound. It's not like a can, is it?
A tin of tuna. I wouldn't eat that tuna if it's a bit fizzy, mate.
Go. Don't throw me under the bus. You do an opening can of tin of tuna. All right, it's all right.
Not bad, was it? I've been practicing that for weeks, mate. Practicing that. So let's talk about UFC Stockholm off the back of me opening a can of tuna live on air. First, start with the main event, because we're going to talk about Gustafsson after this. But Gustafsson versus Anthony Smith. We talked about it before your podcast last week, about it being a strange fight for both these fighters, and whoever lost this, that's a real step back.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, Anthony Smith, right from his walkout, which is one of the scariest slow walkouts I've ever seen any UFC. He was staring every Stockholm fan.
It was in enemy territory, so.
Yeah, but he was staring them down like, I'm here to do the business. And his demeanour was somebody that was looking, and he even said this, he wants to wipe away that performance against John Jones. And yeah. he looked great during that. Gustafsson is a tough, awkward opponent. But the fact that Anthony Smith finished him, that does put him a little bit back in the mix. He's way off ever getting a title shot against John Jones again, but he certainly made a statement as far as being in that top five.
100%. It's not going to be easy to go in, like I say, off a loss to John Jones, to go into someone like Alex Gustafsson's backyard and pull up a you know, everyone's against you sort of thing. You know, I think he was probably the, if not the biggest or underdog on the card. As far as itself, Gustafsson, thought he started well quite wisely. You know, Smith is a bit of a powerhouse. He kept him on the outside, kept him moving, didn't stay planted in front of Smith where he could get hit. Smith, we can see he was actually starting to get a bit frustrated over those rounds. You can see that he's throwing big shots and just missing. But, you know, you see me start getting frustrated. A couple of them kind of hit here and there. And I thought, the first two rounds, you may have given it to Smith because of the aggression, but the third round, I gave it to Gustafsson. And I actually thought that the momentum on the fight was definitely going in his favour, especially, I think it was the end of the third round. He got a takedown. Great takedown.
Solid.
Yeah, solid takedown, and then ended the round on top and definitely won that round, where the first two rounds, you know, it's a bit touch and go. That's why I think a takedown within a round of MMA is very important. And he did that in the end of the third round, but did that play to his downfall going into the fourth, thinking, okay, right, I'm just going to take him down again, and he went for a takedown, didn't do the best.
It was the judo trick, that was the thing, wasn't it? And Anthony Smith is so strong that he was just able to reverse that.
Yeah, and then he got taken down. He did the right thing, defending-wise, by tripoding up, trying to get Anthony Smith to fall off. But like I say, a lot of people don't realise that Anthony Smith is a high-level black belt.
I had no idea, mate. Yeah. I honestly had no idea. Zero. I just thought he was a banger. Like, you look at his record.
He looks like a banger, doesn't he?
He's like got that scary demeanour. But I had no idea his grappling. Obviously, it's of a level because he's in the UFC. But the black belt level. And the adjustments he made on the back to finally flatten him out and then get that finish, that shows it.
And that's the thing with Gus. I think Gus has got some he's not like a world-class BJJ guy, but obviously I think he's training of MMA, he's okay, well versed on the floor, but I believe he's more of a top guy. You saw against his fight against John Jones, when he was on his back, he just ran out of ideas. He looked like he didn't know what he was doing down there. But when he was on top on the end of that third round, you saw that, like, good ground and pound, good posture and stuff like that. So it was just a bit of an unfortunate mishap that Smith's strength managed to get that position. He'd done the right things trying to defend by posturing up, but then Smith just stayed on there, done the right thing yet again, flattened him down. And when you flatten his base right down, then he's got to try and put his hands down to push up to try and elevate himself then, and left his neck out and got choked out. Yeah, and you sort of disappointed him, and you know, he was, yeah, what did I say? Yeah,
it's tough to watch, especially and he even said it, that's the second time he's lost in Stockholm. The first one was against Anthony Johnson, when they brought that huge card there, the 30,000 seater, the 6 in the morning main event. But you could see the disappointment on his face, but there was a classy reaction from Anthony Smith, wasn't there? As soon as he'd done it, spent a little moment with Alexander Gustafsson. So much respect between these two. I think they kind of knew. Even Anthony Smith said it's almost a shame they had to meet, but they knew they would eventually have to meet. But seeing that sort of respect between the two, and on the credit to Anthony Smith to rise himself up after the defeat against John Jones and the way he lost to John Jones, to put on a performance like that was amazing. And what was also amazing was how quiet the crowd went. Have you ever had that? Have you ever been in, like, finished somebody and the crowd just go whoosh?
Well, not in MMA, because, I mean, like, I think most places where I went, had some sort of following, even though even in America, just because the type of fighter I was, people just enjoyed watching me fight, and I always had a bit of a fan base. But it did remind me of something when I was 19, I boxed for a little bit. I had a couple of years of boxing, and I went to the, I fought a guy for, I think it was Mansfield or Macclesfield or something like that. The guy had been in jail. He'd been in jail and just come out of jail. and I was fighting this guy.
Starting well already. Right?
I turn up to the, as people know, in boxing, you turn up and you weigh in on the day. I weighed in. My coach said to me, "Oh, by the way, he weighed in 2 kilos heavier than you." And that doesn't sound like a lot, but in boxing, it was a lot, especially when I used to box, like, I think I was 56 kilos. Okay. Walking around at 56 kilos, wow. So I wasn't a big person. So he weighed a bit bigger than me.
You've really shut up though, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. But my coach said to me, "Oh, you know, if you don't want to take it, don't take it. But if you do want to take it, it's that guy over there." And he pointed to me, this guy over there, and I look at this guy, I'm like, and it's this little skinny looking dude. I'm like, how's that guy weigh more than me anyway? I'm like, oh, he looks like a dweeb, but I'll have a piece of that. So I said yes to the fight, no worries. And then I remember walking out to the fight. I came out second, I don't know why, for some reason. But I came out second, and I'm looking over into the ring, and I'm like, that is not the guy that you pointed out to me. This guy was jacked, tattoos everywhere. You know, obviously he'd been in jail for I don't know how long for, but he was just pumping weights.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
He looked jacked. And I'm thinking, what the hell is going
on
here?
That's why they sent you out last. That's
yeah.
Why.
And then I got into the ring. And I remember the fight. I remember we started exchanging a little bit. And I would think I was getting the better of him. But every time he just like hit me once or even missed me, the whole crowd would go, it was mental. He had about 500 people there for him. So obviously every time I hit him, it was quiet, and then he hit me, and it kind of wound me up within the fight. I was getting angry. And I remember just at one point kind of dropping my hands and throwing a overhand right that missed, but came back with a left hook, which was not technically great. It was like literally thrown from my holsters down by my hips.
Yeah, literally.
And it just cracked him, knocked him out.
Yeah.
He went down, right? And he was in the corner. He went down. And I walked off, and I was like, "Get up!" I was like, just so pumped, like, "Get up!" I really just wanted to fight. And he tried to get up, and he just fell back down again. And the ref stopped it. But on that, literally, my girlfriend at the time was there, my brother and my dad, he was like, these three people, and the whole crowd is quiet, but I could hear my dad and my brother and my girlfriend go, it was just like, it was quite funny.
Oh, did you have to walk back through these 500?
Oh, yeah, but when you knock someone out, you kind of get a bit of respect.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I was a bit worried about it, but obviously there's a happy ending, but that's hilarious. But Anthony Smith did that in Stockholm in similar fashion, just to feel the atmosphere. And you heard the commentators, John Gooden in particular, was saying just how it had drained from all of that. That must have been some feeling. And then the crowd had something else to deal with, because straight after the fight, in the post-fight interview, Alexander talks to Dan Hardy, and you see him taking his gloves off, and we're all wondering, is this going to happen? And then he lays him down and says, "Show's over, guys."
But it's hard for yourself. It was like, when you get to that sort of level in competition, and you've been there for a long, long time, and like you say, he's fell over the final hurdle a couple of times, it's hard to motivate yourself. It depends what your motivation is. If it is money, motivation, or if it's competition. Most, not everyone, but most athletes are competition driven, especially in the UFC. You want to get to number one. Sure. And when that kind of goes for you, you have to find other ways to motivate yourself. Oh, you got a family. I want to feed my family. I want to earn money. That's another motivation. But like for myself included, I'll just speak of myself here, money didn't motivate me that much, as much as competition. So when I felt myself moving down the ladder, that's why I went down to flyweight to try and rekindle myself. So he's got to find something inside to motivate. It's not an easy sport to do. So you have to find motivation. So If I was an advisor to him, because I still think he's not that old. I can't remember exactly how old he is.
Mid-30s, I think, or early 30s, I think.
Especially...
32.
I mean, like, he's
look how jealous we sound.
Yeah, mate, I'm so jealous. I felt my best when I was that age. Yeah. But, like, especially in his weight class, you have a lot more longevity within your career. Especially someone with him, he has great footwork and stuff like that. What I would like to see is maybe him go up a weight class.
He's big. Do you remember when we were in London and it was the UFC card there, and he was there with a couple of fights, Jimmy Manuel in particular, and we had a coffee with him and his manager. Yeah. I could not, but that was the first time I'd met him. I could not believe the size of the
man. He's big. He has a massive frame. So I just think with his sort of boxing and movement, he can outbox a lot of guys up there. Obviously, stay away from the big punch, but he's very rangy. It's not as if he's gonna struggle to hit someone like
Derek Lewis or someone like that.
No way. He can outstrike that guy all day long and still, you know, get back and never know. And that division as well is all up in the air.
Totally.
You never know what's going on with that.
Don't know how long Cormier is going to be around. There's some bits there. There was a good response off the back of him announcing his retirement from the likes of John Jones. John Jones says, "I don't believe it," but he thanked him for Daniel Cormier also reached out, said, "We had our back and forth, we bickered, but you made me better, so thank you for all you did for the sport." The amount of people, especially from that area, Scandinavia, who have recognised what he's done, it's no small task, is it? You've been part of bringing the show to your hometown in London. It's no small task raising it, the profile of a niche sport to the point
where... A lot of my fights were in Sweden as well, and they only went to Sweden because of Gustafsson.
Yeah.
You know? I sent him a message on Instagram to say, "Hey, thanks, mate," and all that sort of stuff. I enjoyed sharing the same cards as you. I've been out with him a couple of times. Yeah, he's a very reserved character. As you can tell now, even you see his social media is not massive. Has a nice little house in the country, kind of thing.
He's very much like that.
He's secluded himself. So he's not all about the glitz and the glam. But for me, I just seeing him, how he performed against John Jones the first time, because that really made him a superstar overnight. You know, because no one gave him a chance for that fight.
Sure.
And that just to see it made John Jones look a bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, because arguably, he could have won that fight, you know?
Yeah, many thought he did take it on points. Many thought he took it. That's why they were... But do you know, that was 2013.
Mm.
That's a scary thought, isn't it? That fight still feels so fresh. I know they've had the rematch, but 2013, and then he built his way back up through some absolute wars as well to get that rematch.
I say more recently, maybe him versus Glover, you know, the combination of those... Free uppercuts.
We've got a few comments. Yes, who's that? Debo says that's the original three piece and soda. It's got to be the Teixeira knockout, the three uppercuts followed by the right hand. Simon Mabry, the fight with John Jones was truly an epic battle between the two of the best at their best. Only Lawler and McDonald comes close to that, which is I agree with that. Gav on Twitter, his first fight with John Jones has got me heavily into the UFC. Rather than just having a passing interest. So like he's got a legacy in this
sport. 100%.
And what would you say if fighters are going to look back and remember Gustafsson, what will that legacy be? Because he was always perennial. He's always that horrible word where he's a perennial contender. He's always up there. But the stuff he's done and the people he's fought, that's carved not just his own place, but there's loads following him. You just got to look at the likes of the people coming round. So
he's a big part of the gym now, All Stars. I can't see him moving away from the sport too much. And if you want me deep down inside me...
Do you think he'll fight again?
I don't know. I mean, like, many people retire, you know? Like, also as well, he retired, emotionally.
Yeah.
It wasn't like when I retired, it was a premeditated thing that, hey, on this day, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
No matter what the result, I'm going to do that, you know? So I already made up my mind. I didn't make that decision emotionally, you know? So... when your emotions are running high like he was, because he could have won that fight. You know, he was looking good at the time he got beat. And then if he won that fight, would you reckon he'd be retiring? Probably not. So it's hard to say when he emotionally, like you're saying on that when he was doing it as well, I need to go back and talk to my coaches, my family and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. He just needs to find motivation again. Because to go back into a training camp, be away from your family, he's got family now, being away from your kids, you know, grinding hard, when you're fighting these young and up-and-comers who are solely so motivated to get where you are, you know. So he needs to go around to see, one, if he could find the motivation and what would motivate him, you know. Maybe a different weight class. You know, it'd be a fight. If someone said to him right now, we'll give you... No, maybe not.
Daniel Cormier, heavyweight. Maybe that was like the little spark. But like you said, even in the post press conference, he said when he was asked, would you have retired if you had won? He said, absolutely not. So there's...
Yeah.
That, like you said, it's...
I didn't see that part, so...
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. We'll see how that pans out. But we'll give a few other shout-outs for some on your Instagram, mate, @1_punch. People mentioning their favourite moments. That's the other one he did I forgot about. He proposed in the cage after
he beat
Glover.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
so
yeah,
he's one-upped every man. When we sit at dinner table and say, what's your proposal? The Empire State Building on the beach. No.
My wife said to me, if I did that, she would say no. So yeah, I couldn't deal with the embarrassment.
I love your wife. The combo on Glover is getting most of the love there. Then also his win against Manuel, which gave him the shot against that. And then for them to become teammates off the back of that. So all that we've heard about Gustafsson, what is nice to see, is good stuff. Yeah. It's all about not just him as an athlete, but his character as well. So if it is the last we see of Alexander Gustafsson, thank you for all you've done. 100%. It's been absolutely awesome. Yeah, maybe heavyweight, mate. Maybe just eat a few more Scandinavian snacks.
I think with his movement and stuff, he could do great things there. But like I say, it's all to do if he's motivated to do that or not.
So we'll talk about some of the other performances on UFC Stockholm. Now, Chris Fishgold, we had him on the podcast last week, came up against Makwan Amir Khani. Fishgold looked good. He looked decent. That was a good fight. Khani is a tough puzzle, I'll say that, as far as the sort of skills he brings. But I think that first round in particular, he was holding his own and he just got caught in that submission. It was a beautiful submission, but even on the ground when Amir Khani was on top, Fishgold was going for sweeps, knee bars, the lot. He looked decent.
Yeah, I wasn't disappointed in Fishgold's performance, more impressed by
Makwan Amir Khani.
His performance. Think of him, he's very flamboyant, Makwan, you know, so he tends to get under some of his opponent's skin. But for me, Fishgold seemed very relaxed, didn't really. I was speaking to him last week when he was going on about, you know, the social media, he just blocked him, you know, don't want to hear it, you know. Yeah, yeah. And he seemed very focused in the fight. He's boxing, I say, looked really good. But yeah, Makwan, he's a different level when it comes to wrestling, got him down. And I believe he has a very good anaconda choke. He amended, I think
it was deep, mate.
He got Tom Dukumar with that before. I think that was probably pre-UFC.
Right.
He submitted Tom Dukumar with that. But obviously, Fishgold, again, he's no slouch on the floor. He was doing the right things. They're like doing a rotation around in circles.
The clockwork.
He was doing the right thing, but he just caught up in the end and unfortunately had to tap.
But it was still an impressive performance as far as stock and like when you sometimes see someone get beaten or finished in the UFC, you think, well, maybe they're not at that level. He's proved in his last two fights he can hold his own in there and he's improving every single time, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's like he 100% be back and he's trying to get him with the right sort of opponent. And maybe if he back when English saw that him and Grundy.
Mike Grundy.
I think, you know.
Well, that's the Battle of Liverpool, isn't
exactly.
it? There you go. Yeah. Yes, that's a superb fight, mate. You should matchmake. Yes, that's a stunning fight. And as far as Makwan Amir Khani, looked great again, not just before, but after the fight. He wears a decent suit, mate. In fact, do you remember it was when he was on the same card as you, I believe?
When he fought Ogle, and he beat Ogle.
In 8 seconds.
Yeah. And then people were saying it was stopped early and maybe would be up for doing a rematch. And he says, well, how am I going to beat him? Yeah. Do you want me to beat him under 8 seconds? He's a very flashy character. He's very fun. And like I say, it was a good performance yet again. I think he lost to Arnold Allen by a split decision.
Close fight, though, mate.
Close fight.
Very close fight.
I just want to see him more active.
He's out for about a year, I believe, in that one. But I will say this.
He's been in fighting literally once a year.
Yeah, but I think there was an injury or something to do. I think a fight got pulled as well.
I also think he took some time out to concentrate on his boxing or something like that.
So
it means a bit. Still, he's only fighting once a year. So he does a good performance like he did there. And now, if you don't see him in a year, you forgot.
You're out of the conversation. Yeah,
you're not in the front of people's minds. Obviously, right now, he fought at the weekend. People are thinking about him, blah, blah, blah. You know? And then if you... After 6 months, people are starting to forget about you, and then Makwan. Yeah, see, he has a lot of potential, but to get himself in the mix, which I believe he should be up there, he just needs a bit more active.
And we'll talk about another KO of potentially the year, if not the night. Leonardo Santos against Stevie Ray. That was just. Did you see that one?
That's one I didn't actually catch that.
That's
one, unfortunately.
An unreal performance, especially because Leonardo Santos had been out for 3 years, roughly. So he Stevie Ray's a tough character.
He's tough.
Well. And he looked good. You would have liked his boxing. A lot of head movement, a lot of using the body to work
was
his
that,
way inside.
Was that Stevie Ray's first fight back within the UFC as well?
So, no, I think he's had one since then. So he never actually got cut, I don't believe.
Yeah, no, he was just like...
So sort of campaigns to sort of get another fight. But it was one of those knockouts where he just fell like a tree, caught him with a straight right. And that went viral as well. So Leandro Santos, coming from that Nova New camp, Now camp... Looked great, and he's another one who's begging to be more active now. So some really impressive performances at UFC Stockholm. Obviously, the thing that people will remember most is now the retirement of Alexander Gustafsson. But good moves for Leonardo Santos, as well as the likes of Anthony Smith and everybody else, and Rakic obviously as well. And speaking of Alexander Rakic, I believe if we're lucky enough, he should be joining us on the phone now. So we are joined by the man of the moment, Mr. Alexander Rakic. Thank you for joining us, mate. It's a pleasure to have you on, and what a weekend you've had. Has it set in exactly what happened this weekend?
Yes, I was preparing myself for this kind of victory many, many weeks before, and everything went perfect the last 2 months. And yeah, that makes me really happy what happened on Saturday.
You kind of predicted it as well, because in one of the interviews I saw with you on the media day, you said everybody will be talking about me. Everyone will know my name Sunday morning. And there's very few video KO knockouts that have gone as viral as yours. So you predicted that as well, mate. A bit of Mystic Mac going on with you as well.
Yeah, I mean, everybody likes to talk, and everybody likes to push yourself, you know. I don't want to sound like I predict everything, because nobody knows what's going to happen. But I was confident in everything what I'm doing, you know, and my camp was perfect. And the last 2 weeks before the fight was like unbelievable. Everything I touch, I break. It was like that, you know. Everything I touch in the training, everything, I take the bottle, I break the ball, everything. It was really like that. In the 5 week, I told my coaches, man, everything I touch, I break. And that's happened on Saturday. I touched Jimmy and I broke him.
Where do you see a knockout like this against Jimmy Manoa puts you within the division?
I expect I'm going to take his place in the rankings. Just a couple of more guys in front of me, and I'm going to focus on them. I already, me and my team, study all of them and climbing the ladder up to the top.
These conversations that we're having, do you almost have to pinch yourself a little bit when you are now talking about yourself potentially fighting these top 10, these top 5, even John Jones, the champion, where people are putting you in that conversation? When you look back to your MMA debut, the first fight, the only fight you've lost, and you jump back to that memory, could you ever picture where you've got yourself now? I mean, what was that like losing that fight, and what's driven you on this 12-fight win streak since that moment?
Yeah, this first fight I lost, this was a nightmare. I was like, yeah, I basically jumped from the kickboxing to the MMA. I was doing the same mistake what 80% of the young people does. Okay, they see UFC and they watch the fight and they say, oh, I want to train MMA. And they go directly to the MMA class. There is no wrestling, no grappling, no striking. They say just, I want to train MMA. And that's basically what I did. I was like a kickboxer going to the gym and straight to the MMA class. And I was training like 6 months. And we had a crazy, crazy coach there. And he pushed me like into the fire. He said like, hey, I have a fight for you in Germany. You want to fight? And I say, yes, why not? I'm going to fight, because I'm getting used to, in kickboxing, you fight every month, you know. So I have a lot of kickboxing fights, and I said to him, yes, let's fight. And the fight day was coming. I was training just 6 months, and I knew just the basic things on the ground. I don't even wrestle, you know. And then the fight day came, and my opponent got canceled, and I got the chance to fight in the main event. For a title,
wow.
5 rounds, 5 minutes, and this was my first fight. You know, this story is crazy, and
wow.
I got, yeah. And the best thing was the promoter was the coaches of my opponent.
Oh, mate, Come on.
And I made him like 2-3 cuts, and he was blood everywhere. So the doctor should stop the fight, but he didn't. And my stupid coach told me, like, in the first round, the last minute, go for a takedown, score the round. And I went for a double leg, but with my neck, like, hey, here is my neck. And he took my neck and submitted me with the guillotine. And this was horrible, you know. I almost won the fight, my first fight, and then I lost it. And it was like 6 months I was thinking on that, and I told myself, never again, never ever again. I've been, then after that, I put hours and hours to train grappling, jiu-jitsu, and wrestling before I took the next fight. Then I had 5-6 fights and got my first serious knee injury. I tore my ACL and my meniscus on the grappling in the training. So that put me away like 6 months. And I recovered from them and started already training hard and fought a couple of more times. And then I tore my ACL again.
Wow.
For the second time on the same knee. And this was like the surgery was really, really complicated and takes like 4 hours. So I was 18 months out of the fighting, you know, just rehab and physio. And after that period of recovering, I was like learning, studying about everything, like fighting, technique, nutrition. I wrote a lot of books, and I was like keeping all the time learning. And then after my comeback fight, I fought a dangerous Brazilian guy here in Vienna, in my hometown. I beat him in the first round, and after that win, my manager came 7 days later and put me the UFC contract on table. I was not believing that, and I was asking him, man, do you think I'm ready for those guys? And he said, yeah, I think so. You're the future. And I was not believing that, you know, because I was thinking, oh, I'm not ready for those. They are machines. And then I have my coaches and they believe in me. And we are here now, 4 fights in the UFC, 4 wins. And the last win was the biggest win of my career. And I know now I'm ready for those guys and I belong there in the rankings.
So obviously you started off your MMA career and you're mostly fighting in Austria. What is the actual MMA scene there? Is it quite big? Is there a lot of shows or is it just one show here? Is there a lot of gyms? Do you struggle to get training partners where you're training?
I mean, when I started MMA in Austria, the MMA was really small here, but we're getting bigger every year. And when I signed with the UFC, they really start to recognize and the MMA sport here. And we have many gyms, especially in Vienna, in the capital of Austria, and also many fighters and a lot of shows here. And I have a couple of sparring partners here, especially we have a lot of Russians here from Chechnya. And all known, everybody knows they are really good wrestlers. So in this part, I have a good training partner in the wrestling. We have also some quite Brazilians here. They open their jiu-jitsu school and some teach jiu-jitsu here. And Europe is known about the good striking. So in the striking, we have everywhere you go in Europe, you have a good striking school. So I was like basically training all my career in Vienna. When I signed with the UFC and start to prepare for the UFC fight, I changed my camp to the American Top Team in Florida. And before every fight, I go there for 2 months because you have more sparring partner there. And I would not say the level is better than in Austria because really we're getting really, really good. But I'm going there for sparring partner because they have so many of them. And everybody has different styles.
It was quite a moment for you as well. Am I correct? You were the first Austrian to fight on a UFC main card. Is that right?
That's right.
How proud does that make you? And when you look at somebody like Alexander Gustafsson, who just retired in his hometown and has made a legacy across the globe, but also in Scandinavia for himself, do you visualize that for yourself, bringing events to Vienna, to your home city, and what you can do for the young upcoming fighters by inspiring them by what you do now?
Of course, I'm very proud of that, to be the first Austrian on the main card and to be a great ambassador for the Austrian MMA. what I'm a little bit sad about the Austrian media and something like that, because they don't really recognize my hard work, what I do for the for this sport. Because for the media and for the people in Austria, MMA is just a brutal fighting sport. You know, they don't see the hard training.
Sure.
And the, yeah, so that makes me a little bit sad. But I want to make MMA popular in Austria, like you said, like Gustafsson does it in Stockholm. I've been in Stockholm many, many times, and everybody, when you talk about MMA, they know the sport and they know Gustafsson. So he made it really good, and everybody loves MMA in Sweden. And that's my goal to do it in Austria, you know, to make the sport popular, because we have a lot of young upcoming fighters who they have talent and they can make it to the UFC. And we have now three fighters from Austria. They are signed with the UFC. So it would be possible to make a UFC in Vienna, because that would change a lot of things in for the Austrian MMA.
And you've trained a little bit with Gustafsson. I know you've mentioned him like a couple of days a while back, a few years ago, but now he's retired. What are your memories of him, or have you got any anecdotes as far as him as a person outside the cage as well as inside it, and what legacy he's left?
Yeah, I was training with Gustafsson 4 years ago. I went to Sweden. I was getting prepared for one of my fights in Vienna here, and I wanted to do like a training camp somewhere else, and I chose Sweden because of Gustafsson. I think he fought after this fight. He fought John Jones.
Yeah, that's right, when he beat Manuel. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he fought the first time, and then he was like the hero of the European MMA, and everybody was watching on him. And Sweden is not so far away from Austria, so I decided with my team to go there and to train with him. And he is still one of my idols. He is a great fighter, and I respect him. And I was training with him couple of times, and he gave me some good advices. To watch him on Saturday, to saw his like performance, and to see like he's retiring, this makes me really sad, because he's still, I think, 31 or 32 years old.
Yes, yeah.
He's not so old for this weight class, but he decides that. But something tells me he's gonna be back. He needs just I think 2-3 more years. Then he's gonna feel that hungry again, and then he's gonna be back for sure, because when you are one, you're born as a fighter and you have this with you, you know, you cannot put it back and say, I'm not going to fight him more. The fire will come for sure again.
You talk about having a lot of energy. One thing that will certainly sap that is when a new baby arrives in the world, my friend. And congratulations, you have a baby due in September. Is that right?
That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's it. Well, Brad is a father of two. I am a father of one. And we're both about 40, but we look about 65. So I don't know what advice we can give you on that. But what I will say is I follow you on Instagram. And obviously, there's you and your partner, your wife, a very good Instagram couple, by the way. How long have you been together? Did you meet before cauliflower ears or after cauliflower ears?
Before.
And what does the wife think of these wonderful cauliflower ears you've grown yourself?
She
now?
Likes it.
Really?
She likes it. Yes, man. She likes it. She's also Serbian like me. Like, my parents are from Serbia. I'm not the typical Austrian guy. I live in Austria, but I'm Serbian. But the girls from Serbia and like Serbia is similar like Russia. Serbia is a small Russia, I say all the
okay.
time to explain it very good. And the girls from there, they love fighters and they love to having a strong man by their side, you know, to protect the family and to protect the wife, you know. And my wife, she likes it. She likes it. She said, like, she cannot imagine me without them, because this is part of me now. And, like, I say it's my wife, because she's my wife. We live together 6 years already, and just next month we're going to make it official. And
congratulations. That is awesome.
Thank you.
Can we ask you, because obviously we just talked about Alexander Gustafsson did the proposal of all time in the cage after winning. How did you propose to your lovely lady?
I proposed her 1 week before my fight in UFC Hamburg last year. I was in the camp in American top team, and I brought a ring in America, and coming back to Vienna 2 weeks before the fight to acclimatize, because the fight was in Europe, in Germany. And 1 week before the fight, I told her, like, let's go out, let's have a walk. And it was like a nice park here in Vienna. We love to go there. And I was like calling my friend who is a photographer, and he was hiding in a park. And I told him, like, when I do it, make good pictures, because this is not going to happen twice, you know.
Wow.
So I'm not going to propose her twice. We was planning to have a wedding in this September, but God gave us a baby, and we're going to get be parents in September, so we move our wedding to July.
What a year you are having, mate. A baby, getting married, 4 wins in the UFC, 2 back-to-back knockouts. I think you are one of the people that are really setting a fire to the scene, especially over here. And like you said, you wanted everyone to know your name the day after UFC Stockholm. There is no doubt now, with a knockout like that, especially over somebody with like such a good name like Jimmy Manu, or somebody who's been in there with the best in the division and is a dangerous striker himself. You've really put yourself now up there as somebody who can mix it up and be pictured in that top 5, even title challenging. So congratulations on that. Congratulations on getting married. Another congratulations for having a baby. And we look forward to whatever comes next, mate, okay?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want to let people know where they can find you on social media so they can follow this journey as well?
Of course. On Rakic, my Instagram and my Twitter is basically the same name, Rakic_UFC. Yeah.
Excellent. We look forward to seeing more cauliflower ear pictures, mate. All right. Best of luck to you, and we'll see you soon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a good day.
So that's Alexander Rakic. He's in a great spot now, in a division that has got new blood. That just feels like it's come alive again. There was a long time where the light heavyweight division was a little bit stagnant, where it was a little bit caught up in top-end politics, trying to get certain matchups made, and no new blood. But now you've got the likes of Luke Rockhold moving up, Rakic, Johnny Walker, all those people really making moves and making that now an interesting division again.
It's a weird one. It's kind of like you don't know whether to say it's loads of new people or a little bit lack of depth within that division, where you can move pretty quick. You know, a couple of good wins, you're in the mix. The thing from that fight, impressed by Alexander, it was awesome, but it's just, where does Jimmy go? That's
one of the questions we've got.
I took that more away from the fight, isn't where does Jimmy go from here?
And what's your thoughts? Because he's not like Alexander Gustafsson. He's not big enough, I believe, to make the jump to heavyweight. No. He's a big dude,
yeah. But you're right. He's a lot older. He's 39 years of age.
Yes.
It's one of those ones where, yeah, again, it's a bit tricky, because not saying Jimmy was one-dimensional throughout his career, but he was a striker. He's known as a striker, and that's it, you know. Like, and he doesn't really have a plan B. So it's not as if... If you're a submission artist and you're getting submitted every time, he's like, oh, what's going on here? So it's sure. Him. He wants to knock people out, but now he's getting very vulnerable himself. He's getting knocked out. And when other fighters see that, you saw that, Rakic saw that, Jimmy threw a couple of bombs, you know, one big low kick, that was only a few seconds, and one massive left hook, which he's renowned for, Jimmy's left hook. But there's no like, okay, fine, I'll just walk for you a few punches, and if I land you, you could be out, going out. So it's kind of like a real hard position to be in, where your chin is, as they say, starting to go, but you don't have nothing to rely on. I relate this to my career a little bit. Towards the end of my career, I was getting dropped a lot more within my fights, but I had a backup. I can wrestle. I can wrestle. I can take you down. I'm clipped. I'm a bit all over the place. I will still take you down and like recover. I've done that in a few of my fights. So, yeah, it's hard where Jimmy hasn't really developed those other areas. I'm not saying he hasn't developed those areas. I've never seen those other areas. So I don't know if he's got them or not. He may have them, and he's just keeping it a big secret. But,
But he's in a tough spot now.
Very tough.
Tough spot. Yeah. He's got something.
Especially now, his main teammate's retired.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But also, we wish him well because it was a nasty knockout.
The
way his head dropped backwards onto the canvas in particular was that. So we wish Jimmy Manor a speedy recovery and whatever comes next. Obviously, he's created a great fan base over here and he's made a big name for himself. So all the best to Mr. Jimmy Manor. Now, let's look ahead at this card that is coming up, which is just, I've just got it in front of me and I'm flicking through it. Unreal card, UFC 238 happening this weekend. Early morning, British Standard Time for us. 3 a.m. we'll be delving into that main card. But let's talk about these fights. Henry Cejudo versus Marlon Moraes. This is your division, mate. When you look at that and you look at Cejudo, what he did at 125, now moving up to the 135, what's your thoughts?
I don't know if this is something the UFC is planning to do. I've been doing quite a bit. A lot of cards seems for me is in that there's a lot of movement within a weight class. The one just gone, it was the 205.
Yeah.
A lot of movement within that division. This one's 135. You have obviously Henry and Marlon at the top of the bill.
Sure.
Then also you have Petey Yan and
Jimmy Rivera.
Yeah, oh, Jimmy Rivera.
What a fight that is.
I mean, and then also you have Pedro Munoz versus Aljamain Sterling. So
yeah,
these are all big, moving sort of
fights. They affect the division. Yeah,
so
yeah,
I don't know if this is some planning by the UFC or is this
happening,
but I do.
I like it.
Because it leaves a lot of, like, for us, guys love to chat about things, a lot to chat about before and after. Yeah. There's a lot of movement.
It tells us a story. Something's going to happen. We're gonna have something to talk about within that division. But the big thing about this, obviously, it's now a vacant bantamweight title.
Yeah.
TJ Dillashaw gave his title up, was stripped of it, however you want to say it, disappeared off. Go on.
Also, with this division, Uriah Faber's back in.
That's dude, he's back.
Yeah, Uriah Faber's coming back. I was with him the other week, so I knew before he got announced. And like, he was like, yeah, why not? You know, he wants to come back, you know. I said to him myself, hey, you're right, is it because you like, is it the uncertainty within this division? He's like, yeah. Because he wants to be, you know, he's had a WC, he's never had a UFC belt.
He's got to be the biggest bantamweight name never to win
by far.
Never to
by
win
far.
That
one of
title.
The big one of the biggest stars within Zuffa.
Yeah, to never
win a UFC belt. He's had obviously is world champion in WC for a very very long time, but he's one of the biggest stars I say alongside Donald Cerrone, who's never won a UFC belt.
Great shout. And they're both on this card. We'll talk about that fight. Yeah. Oh my goodness. But Marlon Moraes has done some amazing things. Came into the UFC, was, I think, the WF World Series of Fighting Champion, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Marlon, I've trained with him as well.
You've trained with him?
He's a beast. He's good. He's good. I remember training him when he was the World Series of Fighting Champion. He was such a nice guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We had some good sparring, but it was, like, very respectful.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, afterwards, it was all friendly. Yeah, he was a really, really nice guy, you know.
Dude.
You know, asking questions, what about this, what about that? Yeah, so he seemed very approachable. He reminded me a little bit of looks-wise and the way he fought a bit of Eddie Alvarez.
Yes, yeah. Well, they're same camp, aren't they? So
yeah.
They're training under Mark Henry.
They look physically like each other.
They do, like a mini version. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And so he's there with Mark Henry, Frankie Edgar, Alvarez. Also now they've got Zabit Magomed Sharipov over there. Magomed of all these Dagestan and Russian fighters now going over and training with them. And when you look at his career in the UFC, stepped in there with so much hype, then lost a split decision to Rafael Assuncao. And then you jump to his last performance, which was UFC Fight Night 144, where he finished Assuncao in 3 minutes, 17 seconds with a brutal guillotine after rocking him badly with a big right hand. Then the Jimmy Rivera finish with 33 seconds.
Yeah, that's the one. I was at that card because Nathaniel made his UFC debut on that card.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was in New York, in Utica, I believe it was. Everyone was going about Jimmy Rivera leading into that fight.
Yeah, sure.
Because I was looking at him because he was in the scene when I was still competing.
I pictured that fight.
I looked at me versus him, I think, man, this guy's tough. You know, this guy's tough. You know, he's got good, solid striking and very good wrestling. And he looked big for the weight. And, man, that was quick.
Same with Sterling as well. Sterling finished him within 2 minutes of the fight. Nasty. He was going for the head kick, but caught him with the knee, but switched his leg. But that's three finishes all within the 4 minutes of the first round that have set him on this path towards Henry Cejudo. And what's interesting about this is Henry Cejudo is on a 4-fight win streak, that last one against TJ Dillashaw, 32 seconds to defend his flyweight title, now jumping up to try and get the bantamweight title, yeah, to become a champ, depending on what happens with that flyweight division.
Yeah.
But they're both... Yeah. Like competitors, they're both athletes. Cejudo from that Olympic gold medal background, but there's real beef. When you saw them at the press conferences, they're in each other's face, they're talking, and it's almost uncharacteristic. You haven't seen that with either of these in the UFC yet.
I'm gonna say you have, okay, with Henry. I think Henry's one of those guys that are a bit more like,
he's a wrestler.
Yeah, he's got. I think he's got a little bit more cocky with this win. I mean, the last win was a very impressive one, but I think he's got a little bit, you know. Not ahead of himself at all, because he's a world champion. Yeah. I can't say that, but I mean, like, he's getting a little bit more into that sort of, hey, I'm the man sort of thing. I think Marlon's one of those guys, he plays how you play. If you want to play nasty, I play nasty. If you want to play nice, I play nice, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's fun. It makes it way more interesting to fight, and you know, both of them got a lot to fight for.
There's another title fight there, Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Eye. This is the 125 female division. And that's a division that's still sort of forming itself, still figuring out who the contenders are. Shevchenko, without a doubt, has earned that championship. Now Jessica Eye is stepping up. Jessica Eye, when was she last in there? I think it was December.
Jessica Eye's a weird one, because obviously she went for that... really bad patch.
Four-fight losing streak, then three-fight winning streak. But all of her 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 last seven fights have all gone to a decision. So she's somebody that's tough, but what she's figured out in the last three fights is how to sort of get those victories. But against Shevchenko, it's a tough ask, isn't it? Shevchenko is so good. Her work rate, her striking, even her wrestling. You think about that fight against Amanda Nunes, which was up. She won that last round.
Yeah, it was a split decision as well, yeah.
So that's and then we've got what we've classed as the people's main event. Sort of surprised us that they'd added this to this card so fast after Cerrone's last fight.
Yeah, like I say, Cerrone's one of the guys will fight every week if he's not injured, you know. And this fight is... it still may not happen.
Yeah,
I don't want to jinx this fight at all in any way whatsoever.
We're all thinking it though, man. I'm talking about it and I'm thinking, just make it. Like, there's a couple of fights. Obviously, on that, it's a stack cast, beautifully put together. But there's that fight that everybody, I think, every MMA fight, especially with what Tony Ferguson's been through, the journey he's taken, as far as his mental health and whatever's been going on there. What was great to see the UFC help him out. What was also great to see is, when it came out in the papers or when the media covered it, it was actually his wife that was asking for some help. And this is from officials in her state. So it wasn't in a way like there's domestic violence or anything. Just that my husband needs help. They brought it. And the last photo I saw on social media with Tony Ferguson was him and his team, the champ unit, with him, his wife and his kid. And that's something that's good to see as well. And there's so many sad stories and so many stories which surprise us in this fight game with what they do, their mental state and what they put on the line, that to see it all coming round and Tony Ferguson making that walk again, and especially with his family behind him, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, obviously I don't want to get too deep talking about mental health is a massive thing in men in general.
As
being a man, you don't feel like you could talk about your problems because you're a man. No, there's nothing wrong with me, kind of thing. So I mean, it's a very big topic, you know, especially even at the highest level where you're fighting, you know, the pressure's going into a fight. And like,
I can't imagine.
And it's such a, that's like a male dominant sport. It's not, I don't mean it like that way, but it's such a masculine thing, winning. But when you lose.
Yeah, of course.
I remember even myself, as in like, when I lost a few fights, my mojo kind of went and I didn't feel like, so I'm glad that he got some help. Hopefully, I say, nothing happens with this fight and this fight goes ahead. But going back on to the mental issues, I mean, I think it is a very, very big thing within life in general. And I'm really glad that the UFC also stepped in to help out as well and recognised and maybe put mental health issues in the limelight, so people who may have a problem with it, you see that Ferguson, this... you can't find much of a more masculine man 100%, than him, is having mental issues. You know? So hopefully that helps other people go seek
Just get a voice. That's really good to see. But this is a fight that's tearing fans to pieces as well, because they're two fan favourites.
Yeah.
There's the whole story of Tony Ferguson got there, and Donald Cerrone is like, I don't know any fight fan who is into the UFC or MMA that does not like. I've never had a chat with somebody where they've gone, nah, I don't like Donald Cerrone. He comes across, he's so authentic in what he is and what he does. And like you said, he'll fight every week if he could. And the story of him now returning to lightweight, the story of him and his kid, he's undefeated as a dad. And that's something that he keeps saying. That's very cool. So it's just a fight that...
Like I said, going back to what I said before about finding something to motivate yourself. Some people motivate by money, but like I say, I don't think he is. He's not motivated by money. Someone like Conor McGregor is. Where Donald Cerrone, maybe now he's found his new motivation, his kid. You know, that's motivating. That's sparked a fire within
Danger.
Him.
Danger Cerrone. What a name that is. Yeah. I'm called Brian, mate. I have to live with that.
I have some other fighting friends that have then. There's Hunter, Troy. My son's called Buddy. Yeah. Hello, Buddy. Come here, buddy.
Come here, Buddy.
Give me a good cuddle.
Buddy could still beat me up, though, so that's good. But this card says it all as far as how stacked it is. When you look right at the early prelims, and we talk about someone flying the flag for UK MMA, Joanne Calderwood takes on Katlyn Chutagayan in the first fight of the night. That is crazy.
That is crazy. You know, like, yeah.
But that's, like, that says
rank
it.
Number three versus rank number five or something, you know, like... Yeah.
The curtain jerker is quite literally something that could potentially have title ramifications. Yeah,
100%. And then, like, also going up the card, Darren Stewart, you know, like, he's doing good now. He's fighting a lot overseas.
They send him to America all the time, mate. They love to send him over there.
He's been working a lot. He's been working at my gym with a guy called Bola Omielli, and he's one of those people who's really dedicated to getting better. You know, he will seek better training and try and, you know, learn new things. He has no problem with asking questions. So always eager to learn. So it's good to see how Darren gets on this weekend. Obviously.
But you've got Lamas in there as well. And then you've got to talk a little bit of that PTN and Jimmy Riviera fight. Because
what fight?
But yeah, exactly. But Peter Yan, now I've been lucky enough. I've called, I think, three of Peter Yan's fights out in Russia, which have just been unreal. Just watching what he can do in the cage and watching...
Just tough.
But also, he will bring a fight. And he doesn't... Like, and you look at the way he's carved his way. He's now fight number four on this card. This card, which could really... Well, first of all, it's going to claim a new champion.
I mean that fight could easily slip... Further, I mean, I would love to see this fight more, you know, if that makes sense. For me, this is one of the great fights on the card, but I could have seen it could have easily been on the prelim.
Yes,
so
headlining
glad.
The prelim.
I'm so glad this is where it is, because it would give Peter Yan or Rivera a lot more of the limelight, which I believe those two guys deserve. But also going back to the rest of the card, as in, like,
Munoz, Sterling.
Munoz. You trumped me on that one. I forgot about that. That's a crazy good fight as well.
And a bantamweight again, mate. Yeah. And Munoz has been unreal in his last fights. Unreal. And I thought they were going to put him against Yan. But the fact they've put him on the same card, I could quite easily see the winners of those fights facing each other, and maybe moving up.
If I'm right, saying Sterling's been going on a bit of a tear as well.
We're both just flicking on our computers. Yeah. That's how excited we are. But Sterling's three fight undefeated, including the win over Brett Johns, Cody Stammen, and Jimmy Riviera.
Himself,
So it's a fight which you can see. Well, we're gonna have a lot of questions about the bantamweight division afterwards, but also we're gonna get some answers, which is gonna be very exciting.
Indeed.
So we've got a couple of questions. Slaphead Giraffe, I think we both know them quite well. Yeah. They've got their own podcast as well, as you've trained out there, haven't you, in Malaga alongside them. If you had to choose, what are the prospects' next three fights? Loving the pod, by the way, guys. Nice one.
Well, like I've always said that I'd like to see him fight either Chito Vera or... what's his name? The guy he's actually fighting.
Sugar Sean O'Malley.
O'Malley. I think that's a great fight. There's a few good fights within the division. I think we'll put him up there. There's so many fights. That division is pretty stacked.
We just talked about him.
Saw on this card. But I'd rather him fight someone to get him up there. I would have said like someone like Eddie Wineland as
a
well.
Name. Absolutely. Somebody who's been in the game.
But then also some maybe like a Lineker. I mean, that'd be a good fight.
Oh, my goodness.
He's just come back from holiday, you know, and so he's just getting back in the swing.
He's like heavyweight right now, is he?
So now we're just going to look, we're in talks, basically.
That's exciting. That's it. So let's have a look. Jones, Habib or Valentina, who will be the first to lose their belt? That is from Chief Beef, Adam Beattie on Twitter.
That's a hard one. I can't see Khabib losing his belt anytime soon.
not in our lifetimes,
No. The only way he loses his belt by if he like just throws it somewhere and like can't find it.
Yeah,
you know, he won't.
Bear eats it.
John Jones is yet again another hard one. So I'm going to have to go with Shevchenko. But then even saying that, that division is not very stacked. But I'm going to have to say Shevchenko.
And then finally, and we kind of answered this one. Do you think Alexander Gustafsson will compete in MMA again, or do you think he will take up another combat sport? So because you look at his footwork, you think kickboxing, boxing?
Yeah, I don't think he will go into another combat sport. If he does anything again, I think he should go up to, my advice would go up to heavyweight.
Go up to heavyweight. Nice. Well, that is it from us this week. Thank you for joining us once again. If you want to check out where you can keep up with all the UFC action on BT Sport this week, check out their social media at BT Sport UFC on Twitter, at BT Sport on Instagram. It will be on BT Sport 1. Prelims kick off 1 a.m. this early Sunday morning, Saturday night into Sunday morning. So join us then for some more UFC action. Keep supporting the pod. We'll be back next week. Hope we have some news for you next week on the future of the pod and whether we'll get to continue staring into each other's faces in this what is becoming a very sweaty but lovely studio for us.
That's just creeped me out a little bit. And yeah, I'm going to say back to Melissa. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening and keep sharing. And I got really weirded out by the way you looked at me when you said that.
Can we hold hands now?
Okay.
Thanks again. See you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I love the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.